on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Here's a question for you. Are you planning on limiting your exposure to groups of people now? That's the News Click, our daily web poll question. It is sponsored by AARP. Visit aarp.org/Chicago to find out about free events and opportunities to volunteer near you. We gave you three chances. Yes, maybe, and no. I'm in the no category, but I'm not naive to all of this. A doctor will answer some questions in just a minute about if somebody has it in a group and you're in that room, how careful or cautious should you be? We'll get you an answer to that question in just a second. Do you want to go to the doctor these days? Well, nobody ever wants to go to the doctor. But you know where people are just thrilled, happy, joyful, really at least going out and maybe coming in? It's the Joint Relief Institute. It's true. I mean, when you walk in, you will be greeted by happy, cheerful people, really positive. They just exude this energy. And I think I know why. At the Joint Relief Institute, they know what you don't walking in, and that is that while you have that knee pain, it is going to go down. They see you coming in pain, and they go, wow, here comes a happy customer. They are going to be glad they were here. The Joint Relief Institute uses digital imaging to see where the tissue's deteriorated. They put a lubricant into that exact spot. It's all they do. They take a lot of pride in the precision of their craft. And it works. It's a quick, pain-free, non-surgical procedure your insurance is probably going to pay for, and they got somebody to help you with that, too. Two locations. They're in Orland Park and Oak Brook, and it's the same phone number. So either go to their website, jointreliefinstitute.com, or call this number, 708-888-0000, 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Retired city workers stripped of their health care benefits. How cost-cutting left them out in the cold and struggling to survive. WGN-TV investigates Tuesday at 9.
Just real quick, I was watching the Big Ten basketball game between Northwestern and somebody else the other day on TV. Dave Ennett was doing the call.
It was Penn State.
And Penn State's ranked. Go figure. Penn State, good basketball team this year. They got this one guy who looks like he's made of granite. Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm watching the game, and Dave Ennett's doing the call, and it's a terrific broadcast. Even though it's 7 minutes left in the game, he almost jinxed it when he said, this guy always makes his free throws. And I'm like, Dave, that's not going to help. But then he made his free throws. Anyway, the problem was that the game and the radio weren't synced up. That's the way TV and radio are with the delay. And I said, you'd think they'd be able to fix this. Dave Ennett said,
well, if you are listening on the app, then there's a delay. It's going to be behind television.
Yeah.
Now, this all depends on where you get your TV signal from. Do you have DirecTV? Do you have cable?
I'm
do
a
you
Comcast
have rabbit ears? Whatever. But it can all be different, so you have to play with it a little bit. But what I have found is that if you are listening on your phone or on the app or online or somewhere.
Even on the radio.
And, well, yeah,
because you're going to delay it on the TV.
Yeah. I mean, again, it all depends on your delivery system for TV. But if you pause your DVR, and so basically you're watching a recording of the game,
right?
But then you wait till the radio catches up to it.
And then hit play.
and then sometimes you have to go back
that
and forth,
so
stop
obvious.
And start it.
I'm always doing that with games, fast-forwarding through commercials, whatever. I never thought to just sync that up with the voice of the man on the radio.
I didn't either. So people told me they did that to listen to the games.
What a good idea. What a good game that was. Dr. Robert Sitrenberg is on the phone. He was with us the other day after he, I thought, posted a really calming and wise thing on Facebook about coronavirus. He's the infectious disease specialist at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. Hey, Doc, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us again. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
If someone has the virus and somebody else is in the same room, but they don't have the virus, will that second person automatically get it from the first person?
No, absolutely not. So we know the virus is spread really by two means, one we call droplet and one we call contact. So droplet is, you know, when you cough or sneeze, particles come out of your mouth or your nose and they They extend to a radius of between 3 and 6 feet. 6 feet seems to be the magic number. Like, they don't go beyond 6 feet and then they drop to the floor. So certainly if you're beyond a 6 foot radius from someone who's coughing or sneezing, you're considered to be in a safe zone. I think the more important concern about this virus, as is true with many others, is the spread by contact. So if somebody sneezes or coughs onto an inanimate object and then you touch it, the virus, you might pick up the virus on your hands and then infect yourself.
How long will that live on that surface?
Well, that's a good question, and it varies really what type of surface it is. It can be several hours to probably a few days, and it hard, non-porous surfaces, the virus will live longer, and softer surfaces, it will live, won't live as long. Weather conditions have something to do with it as well, but I figure probably at least a few hours on an inanimate surface.
Got it. So, just to be clear, though, that you and I are both breathing in the same room, be it a ship, be it a gymnasium, be it a school, whatever, I'm not necessarily going to get it from you unless I've inhaled some of your sneeze droplets, or you touch the rail, then I touch the rail, then I touch my eye, right?
That's exactly right.
Well, I think that's a little comforting. A little comforting anyway. I mean, that happens often enough. But I think this idea that if I was at the Bernie Sanders rally or at a Trump rally or in a gymnasium watching a basketball game and somebody else has it, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to get it. Doctor, people are concerned that that if they were in the vicinity of somebody who was in the vicinity of somebody with the virus, they should self-quarantine. What do you think about that?
I think people are essentially over-quarantining out of the abundance of caution, which I can understand. But the reality is, unless you are directly exposed to someone who has the disease or you touch it and get it on your hands, you're really not at risk for getting the virus. I think people are probably overreacting a little bit, which is, I think, expected in a situation like this out of the abundance of caution. But, you know, there are things you can do about it. You talked about being in a gymnasium. You can, to the best of your ability, you can stay away from people who are obviously sick. And if you're sick, you shouldn't go out in public places. And the contact, the hands, I come back to that because that's something you absolutely can do by keeping your hands clean, by using alcohol, hand sanitizer, soap and water, and making sure you don't touch your face when your hands are dirty. Those are things you actually can do to mitigate the risk, and they are actually quite effective.
What else would you like our audience to hear this morning, Doctor?
Well, I think what we're starting to see now is what we call social distancing. And this is a strategy that's used to not so much contain a viral outbreak, but more to delay it or mitigate it. And that actually works. Social distancing, we're starting to see that now. College campuses are having kids work from home and online. Businesses are having their employees work online. They're not congregating in large places. We've seen a lot of conventions and conferences canceled. Initially, people thought that was overreaction. I actually disagree. I think it's a good idea. That's actually a good example of social distancing. And to remember, this is a temporary thing. So social distancing is done temporarily to contain the spread of the virus and to limit its person-to-person spread. It's actually quite an effective strategy.
Yeah, yeah. Warm weather, will that help?
This is I want to say a controversial area. So in general, the family of coronaviruses, it's a large family of viruses. In general, they are seasonal wintertime viruses. They tend to not do as well in hot and humid weather. The wild card here is we don't know about this virus. Since it's brand new, we don't know if it's going to follow the pattern of the other coronaviruses, which are seasonal wintertime viruses, or if it will persist throughout the summer. We're certainly hopeful that the weather change in weather will help, but we just don't know yet.
One quick question for one of our listeners. Hey, doctor, how many months are we going to be like this?
That's a great question. I wish I had the answer to it. I think we can look at the experience in China to help give us an idea. So China got a very slow start on this outbreak. They were very slow to recognize it and to acknowledge it and to try to contain it. But if you look at they've had somewhat draconian methods of containment. seems to be working. The number of cases in China goes down every single day. There have been nations that have been very effectively been able to contain it, like Taiwan and Singapore have done a real good job. I think if you look at that cycle, we're hopeful that in another couple of months, we'll start to see significant declines in the numbers of infections compared to what we have now. So we're looking at what's happening in China and what they've done that works to try to emulate that in this country.
We almost need to wash out the number of people who have it, don't know it, and are spreading it. These measures might eventually resolve that issue, but it's going to take a while, right?
Yeah, and I think that there's that brings up the issue of testing. So we have been in this country way behind in testing. The only way to contain an epidemic is to know who has the disease. And we don't really have any idea who has the disease. We do know it's probably far more people than we think. It's probably been circulating in many communities for weeks. Most of the people who get the disease are either without symptoms or have mild symptoms. So there's a lot of people who have probably had it and recovered, and they never knew that they had it. Of course, the concern is they could still be spreading it throughout the population when they're sick, or when they're not sick. But I think we're very slow to respond in this country to testing. As of last week, the CDC had only tested 500 people in the entire country. They're under intense pressure right now to liberalize that, and we're starting to see private labs be able to develop tests.
Right, right.
So many, many more people will be tested, which is a good thing.
Dr. Robert Sitrenberg is the infectious diseases specialist at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. I'll call you again, Doc. Thanks for your time today.
All right, John. Take care.
9:40, this is WGN Radio. You got to find ways to laugh about this or through this. Saturday Night Live had Kate McKinnon doing Laura Ingraham Saturday night. Elizabeth Warren made a cameo.
Please welcome Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Thanks for having me.
How have you been since dropping out of the race?
You know, I'm doing just fine. My friends and family have been so supportive. They've been calling nonstop, asking, are you okay? What do you need? Were you electable? That kind of thing. Now, I've got time to do a little self-care. Hanging out with my dog, Bailey, prank calling big banks, drag racing Subarus, avoiding Twitter.
Hi there. How are you? I want to put on my favorite outfit to thank you for all that you've done in your lifetime.
I'm not dead. I'm just in the Senate.
Right. Okay, you're right. Oh, so let's stay in the spot and let's do this.
Live from New York, it's Saturday night.
So that was the cold open from Saturday
Night
Live.
Please welcome
Elizabeth Warren. With an Elizabeth Warren lookalike as well. Very funny stuff last night, or Saturday night. By the way, so we had the doctor on a little while ago, and he was talking to us just about what the chances are of you transmitting the disease to somebody else, or you getting it from somebody. Say you're in the same room, say you're in the same gym or movie theater, whatever. And he said that 6 foot is the magic number. If I sneeze on you and it goes in you, then you can get it. He also said that if I touch a surface and then you touch that surface and you pick it up and then you touch your eye, your ear, your nose, your mouth, then you can get it that way. But if you're in the same vicinity as someone, if you're even breathing the same oxygen as they are, you're okay. So his point was more, it's so important to just sort of, you know, shield yourself from other people's bodily fluids. Lou Manfredini texted in and said, well, what about if I'm on mass transit? And the doc said that that's just another case in point where when you see all the rails and all, which, you know, this is, when you see all the rails and all the hand grabs and things like that, you want to avoid that as much as possible. That's easier said than done. I guess if you could sit not close to somebody on an L car or bus, you would, but that's not always easy to do. They tend to be pretty crowded, and we're all holding the handrails. I guess if you're going to do that, now it's important to have some Purell. Now it's important to make sure you're not touching your face when you're touching those rails. I told Lou, I said, riding the L is already kind of scary. I think our sort of defense mechanisms are pretty well baked into the whole trip, but be advised that while it might be difficult to do some of those things, that's the best advice. Thank you, doctor. By the way, we're all enjoying at this radio station the video of Lou Manfredini dancing with the stars. Have you seen the video of Lou dancing with the stars from several years ago?
Yes. Yes.
Lou celebrated 25 years of service on this radio station, and it was a sort of in-house video. I don't know if we've posted it on the station site. I don't know if everybody's looking at it. If you Google Lou Manfredini dancing with the stars, you'll see Lou at that Dancing with the Stars celebrity event. And Lou dances very, very well. Interesting thing is, he's quite light on his feet. And in that video, he's probably 30 pounds heavier than he is now because he's gone on that Seattle Sutton healthy eating kick. He's lost a lot of weight, and he's keeping it off. And he looks great now. He looks heavier in the video, but he's dances. Lou, you should dance now and see how well you would do. But I'm also just kind of interested in, if we posted the video of Lou dancing and the video of me dancing with the stars, who would win?
Ooh.
Don't want to say. Frankly, don't want to know because I think it would be Lou. It's terrible what's happening right now. We're at about 23, 24,000 on that border. But I guess the moral of that story is that things do recover.
I was going to say, 11 years ago, that was the start of something good.
I told my son, who is a wage earner and is paying taxes, if you do that dollar cost averaging, this is a good moment for you, Mr. 30 years old. Now, if you're Mr. 60 or 70 years old, you don't want to be liquidating your assets if you can all avoid it. My hope is, I'm not an expert on this, that the market will recover in ways that this will just be a paper loss. You know that, but it's still no fun to watch. And then there's a bunch of legal questions, too. So let's just get a few answers here. Rich Lenkoff's in our studio, the attorney at Bryce Downey & Lenkoff. He's the co-host of Legal Face-Off. Okay, so can you answer a few questions for me about some of the business and legal implications here?
That's why I'm here, sir.
What about if I don't feel well? I want to self-quarantine. Everybody's saying if you don't feel well, don't go to work. But what if I'm an hourly employee? Now I don't get money. I'm not working. Are companies under any legal obligation to pay people that do that?
The answer is currently no. There is some legislation right now in the Congress that would mandate 14 days at least of paid sick leave for employees who are either quarantined or forced to miss work as a result of things like this virus. But currently, employers don't have a legal duty to pay you if you're off work. Of course, there's protections afforded by things like the FMLA and the ADA, but the answer to your question is no.
Are people able to sue these cruise ships, these hotels, these places that they get the virus?
Absolutely. So as we've talked about on your show extensively, in this country especially, anyone can sue anyone for anything. The question becomes whether that will be a successful lawsuit. There's certainly liability, especially for cruise ships. They may have delayed in their efforts to avoid things like this virus.
I guess so. You know, my sympathies weirdly go both ways, Rich. Maybe that doesn't surprise you, but the cruise lines don't want this any more than the people on those dang boats. This is going to cost them billions of dollars, but people want to go on trips. They sign up, they get on the boat. Those cruise lines do everything they can to make those ships clean. It happens. It's not their fault, but maybe it's their liability.
Absolutely. There's a basic concept in tort that if you have notice of something and could have done something to avoid it, it doesn't matter if you're not responsible for it. The notice is in and of itself enough. So in addition to cruise ships, you'll see lawsuits against the nursing home in Seattle, for sure. You'll see lawsuits against restaurants, even employers who, it will be argued, did not act quickly enough to safeguard employees and guests against this virus.
What about business interruption? People have insurance for that, right? So when the houseware convention doesn't come to Chicago, cost the association $77 million, or rather probably cost McCormick Place $77 million in the city, because that's the number they gave us. Insurance pays for that? Is there litigation about this?
You will see litigation spread on that issue almost as quickly as the virus. It's unclear currently whether business interruption insurance adequately covers things like the coronavirus. Typically, business interruption insurance covers things like natural disasters. They have force majeure clauses, which may or may not qualify in this case. Force majeure typically is for things like natural disasters, things that are unforeseen that may interrupt your business. So Of course, insurance companies are going to argue that this was not contemplated by the typical business interruption policy, and that will, to your point, be subject to lawsuits for many years.
I'm sorry, force majeure means if there's a hurricane or tornado and my business shuts down, that's a major force that I could not anticipate, and insurance compensates me, right?
Act of God, force majeure, things like, as you said, hurricanes, tornadoes.
How is this not one of those?
Well, that's a, you know, unlitigated question. We don't know. It will be argued that if the contract has a force majeure provision, then this qualifies. But typically force majeure is for things like natural disasters. Whether this is, you know, one, we don't know. It hasn't been litigated before.
Have we had something like this before? I guess you just answered that.
Yeah, there was lawsuits in the wake of the SARS scare back, you know, a few years ago, but not to this extent. And this is really, you know, sort of a new issue for a lot of insurers.
Elif just handed me a note from the City of Chicago. Paid sick leave policy. Key provisions of the policy include the following. Employees must accrue 1 hour of sick leave for every 40 hours worked, up to 40 in a 12-month period. I guess so critical to this is if you have not accrued enough sick leave days based on the amount of work you've done, you don't qualify. I would suggest the city or county should amend that today.
Yeah, individual employers are going to have different policies with regards to paid sick leave. But, of course, in the wake of all this, those will be changed. There'll be legislation, possibly litigation. But, you know, obviously employers are going to feel, especially larger employers, are going to feel pressure to pay employees. It's a small amount of investment to do the right thing.
Yeah, well, right thing, schmight thing. Do they have to do that? And you said a moment ago, currently they do not.
Correct. Currently they do not, but there is some legislation that was introduced by, I think, Patty Murray out of Washington that may change those things if passed.
Mandatory quarantines. Is that legal? Can you hold me against my will?
Yeah, it's a great question. The short answer is yes, you can. There are vast powers both at the federal level and state level that allow the government to quarantine you against your will. This has been legislated and gone through the courts, litigated through the courts for many years, dating back to cases. I found cases from the late 1800s that state specifically that the government has the power to do that. The obvious reason is, when contrasted with your individual civil liberties, the danger, you know, posed by things like this virus outweigh your individual rights. So there will possibly be some litigation, but the short answer is this has been litigated and it's been found to be legal.
Do you know who pays for that then? Say I'm forced to stay on the boat or in the hotel. Who picks up the tab on that?
Yeah, currently, you know, obviously those hotels or cruises are picking up the tab. If there are, you know, larger quarantines and, you know, it gets larger, you would think the federal government would step in. There has been talk, obviously, of the federal government having to bail out a lot of companies if this goes on for much longer, given all of the conventions that you mentioned are being canceled and given the economic impact it'll have. So inevitably, to answer your question, the federal government will step in and cover some of that cost.
Kathy had a question. Kathy, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? Hi.
Hello. Hi. Good morning. Should I be worried? I have the bulk of my retirement in annuities with a major insurance company, which, of course, are not FDIC insured. Should I be worried that these big insurance companies could be in danger of going out of business with all the liabilities?
I haven't seen how that sector or that group of stocks are doing necessarily. Have you?
I don't know.
That's not your specialty, nor mine. But I think it's a click away. I'll tell you what, I'm going to look into that and come back with what we find after 10 o'clock. Kathy, keep listening. I still think that, and I'm not, this is not me being Pollyanna-ish. I think we all know it will recover from this as sure as the virus will in time dissipate. Might not be this month or next, but I do think we will recover from this. Rich, you're going to post another podcast with answers to questions like this?
Yeah, we're taping today. Later on today at WGN, we'll be talking about these issues. Also, workers' compensation liability. There's a lawsuit, a federal class action lawsuit against Purell for allegedly misstating the effectiveness of their product against bacteria. We'll be talking to Bob Fioretti. We'll be talking to Gloria Allred about the Weinstein trial and a lot of other issues on Legal Face-Off today.
It's an amazing podcast. Rich Lenkoff is the attorney at Bryce Downey & Lenkoff. He's the co-host of Legal Face-Off. coronavirus and business issues later today. You can catch that podcast called Legal Face Off wherever you get them. We posted at WGN as well. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, John.
Our Mega Monday morning quiz in the 11 o'clock hour. Will you be able to join us then or stay with us? Every Monday around 11:35, we ask you some questions. They're always local or Chicago or Illinois based, and Mega Pros are handing out hoodies if you play, so thank you to them for that. Here's one of the questions. And by the way, the theme this week is Illinois college basketball. Illinois college basketball. If that's your cup of tea, I like your chances. How about this one?
Jerry Sloan.
The University of Illinois is the only Illinois school to have won more NCAA college basketball games than this school. They just clinched their second consecutive NCAA tournament berth.
Wait, so any other school in the country?
In the state.
In the state. Only Illinois has won more than this other school.
Yeah, so it means they've been around a long time and they've kind of been a perennial power over the years. And they just clinched their second consecutive NCAA tournament berth. Well, dude, that's... How about this one? The New York Knicks have won the NBA championship only twice, in 1970 and 1973, led by Walt Frazier, an alum of this Illinois basketball program. Where'd Walt Frazier go?
Well, that's a good one. I have no idea.
Oh, good. Well, because I was afraid these were too easy.
I'm going to say College of St. Francis in Joliet.
No. America loves this team's 100-year-old fan.
Well, we know that one.
She is 100 now. She was at the game the other day. Didn't help. Loyola 21 and 11. Hopefully they... Well, I don't know if Loyola is going to be in the tournament this year. NIT.
NIT.
By the way, of 350 Division I basketball teams in America, the big schools, you know, what this college basketball thing is all about, they are in 314th place for free throw shooting. They would win games if they could shoot free throws.
Illinois?
Loyola.
Loyola. Still talking about right, Loyola here. Right, I'm sorry.
It is my great frustration. DePaul is embarrassingly bad at free throw shooting.
Well, we talk about this. DePaul, the only free throws they've made all season were against Marquette last week.
They made 31 of 35. This is a team that cannot hit. They sometimes miss free throws both ways, long, short, and right, left. Some guys, like, it's like, wow, that's just like, you've never shot a free throw before. It's all you do. And they can't hit free throws. They made 31 of 35.
Yeah, it hurt.
To beat some other team in the area. So that's a great frustration for all of us that follow college basketball. And as it turns out, Loyola, which has had some great skilled players over the last few seasons, is one of the worst free throw shooting teams that there is. Hey, Kurt, you're on WGN. What can we do for you today, Kurt?
Hi there. Just calling to let you know that Walt Frazier was a Saluki from SIU Carbondale.
You better believe it, Bucky.
Did you know that, John?
I sure, since I wrote the quiz.
Of course, yeah. Well, no, but I mean before that, because you're a Saluki?
Oh, yes, I did. Okay. Yes, I did. Those of us who went to SIU Carbondale, we ain't got much. We've got Clyde the Glide. Yeah, we have Walt Frazier. Yeah, yeah. Well put. But you don't win now, Kurt. You got to call back at 11:35 and you can play the quiz.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, John.
Thanks for the call. I don't mind tipping our hat a little bit if you're around at 11:35. Our NCAA college basketball Illinois quiz is the Mega Monday morning quiz today. Incidentally, there's a nice story, speaking of sports, about Tim Anderson, the White Sox shortstop, and the New York Times today. Tim Anderson is here to save baseball from itself. Tim Anderson is here to save baseball from itself. Dateline, Glendale, Arizona. Tim Anderson is a study in extremes. Anderson, the shortstop for the Chicago White Sox, had the highest batting average in the majors last season. He also made the most errors. "I'm going to be the best," Anderson said recently. "I don't know when, I don't know how, but I know what to do. Nobody can outwork me, and I'm determined to get there. It's coming." Anderson is 26. Suggested the White Sox marketing slogan for this season be, "Change the game." He is a unifying force in a young clubhouse, encouraging teammates to ask him anything and vowing to take back Chicago, where he lives year-round,
from the more popular Cubs. Every corner you're going to see a White Sox hat, Anderson said. Black and white. Man, it's the most neutral hat in the game. You can wear it with anything. The article goes on to talk about how since the Sox went with the big black and white logo in the 90s, it's been a fashion statement for Dr. Dre and Tupac Shakur and a bunch of hip-hop and rap stars, but the general public as well. Anderson was a dynamic high school point guard who led his team to an Alabama state title. But he's only 6'1", thought he was too short for the NBA. Really good basketball player. In 2013, when he hit almost 500 for a community college in Mississippi, the White Sox made him their first round draft pick. He's overcome a lot to get where he is today. Reminds the article, where's the part about his background? He revels in all he has overcome, growing up while his father, Tim Anderson Sr., was in prison on a cocaine trafficking charge, breaking his leg twice as a teenager, losing his best friend, Brandon Moss, to gun violence in 2017. He is a force, that Tim Anderson. It's 10:14. By the way, White Sox baseball today. The sun will be shining in Arizona, and we will be too. I believe first pitch at 3 on WGN. Insurance companies have fared worse than the overall market since the S&P 500 index reached an all-time high. Now, this article is dated February 27th. At that time, the concern for the falling value in health insurance companies wasn't just the coronavirus, it was Bernie Sanders. People were worried that if Bernie Sanders gets to be president, then there'll be a loss in value for insurance companies. I don't know if, since it seems less likely right now that Bernie's going to be the Democratic nominee, or for that matter, the president, if that's not a concern. But surely what's happening right now with the markets and the coronavirus is a concern for that whole sector. And I looked at a list of insurance companies, and all of them are down. I mean, it just goes down the list. Like we said earlier, you and I are no experts on this. The experts aren't experts on this right now. But you've got to believe, you've got to hope that this thing will rebound, that it will correct and recover. Do I need to take a break here, Ms. Garris? You're looking at me like I do. You said I don't. We haven't given away those Blackhawks tickets yet. So 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I've got a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks versus the Ottawa Senators. That's this Friday, March 13th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at Four Seasons Heating, cooling.com, and tune in again every Monday all season long to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from Four Seasons. Let's make caller number 10 the winner. Caller number 10. I was in an elevator the other day. I was at St. Joe's in Joliet, and the elevator door closes, and standing next to me is a real nice lady and her friend. I'm going to put them at 25 to 30 years old. And they were just chatting away. And the one lady I noticed had on her forearm a tattoo that was on her forearm. So, say, from the baseline of your wrist, about halfway down to her elbow. Some real estate there. And it was a really well-done tattoo. It was just a line drawing, but had every feature you might imagine. The tattoo was of Colonel Sanders. If I were Lou Manfredini, I would have said, hey, what's with the Colonel Sanders? Like, it was really big. It was a thick line. It was, I mean, you couldn't miss it. And it was really, it was done well. And it made me smile, which is maybe all a tattoo is supposed to do. But I got to tell you, I had to think, why Colonel Sanders? Like, could it be that you really like that chicken? Nobody likes KFC so much they get a Colonel Sanders tattoo. Could it be that you work there? Nobody with a job at KFC loves that job so much they want to get it tattooed. I could see if you worked at Google or some cool, fancy, sexy place, but KFC, love their food, not getting the tattoo. Or could it just be that was an inside joke with you? I mean, I just don't know. And the problem, if it's, well, I really like the food, or it's an inside joke, is that How long is that joke going to be so good that you want it there forever? Let's assume that that was a permanent tattoo. It sure looked like one. My question to you is, what else have you seen out there? And have you ever asked? What strange tattoos have you seen and have you asked? My number is 312-981-7200. Call or text. Tell me how that story goes for you. Meanwhile, Laura's in Homer Glen. Hi, Laura. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Oh, glad to hear it. Hey, have you been to a Blackhawks game this year?
No, not at all.
Oh, you got to get over. When's the last time you were at a Hawks game?
It's been a long time.
And I want you to get there early enough so that you make sure you're there for the national anthem, the starting lineups, that sort of thing. It's
okay.
Yeah, they show a giant video on a giant screen that's loud and fun. And then, of course, the singing of the national anthem is just something everybody in America should experience once. And then they're going to play some hockey for you, too, Laura. Sounds good, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Can't wait.
This is this Friday. You talk to producer Laura off the air. We'll make sure we get your information, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
No, you're. Let's see. You're Laura. You talk to producer Elif. It's 1023 on WGN. Okay. Tattoo stories, please, now. 312-981-7200. And I think if I had asked that woman, hey, what's with the KFC tattoo? She would have been okay with it because she's got a Colonel Sanders tattoo on her forearm. I mean, she knows it's going to come up. She knows I noticed the tattoo. So it might just be a nice little friendly icebreaker there. It would go like this. Steve, you be the person asking. I'll be the person with the tattoo.
Okay, so, hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I notice you have an interesting design on your body.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to put it that way.
I didn't hear where it was. I'm sorry.
It was on the forearm. It's a Colonel Sanders.
Hey, listen, I saw you flexing with your cup of coffee, and there's a Colonel Sanders on your forearm.
Yeah, what's up with that, huh?
What's up with that?
Well, as it turns out, I don't know what the answer to that is, but I'm sure...
I wasn't going to jump right in. I was going to sort of ease into it.
It's an elevator ride.
Right.
So I think you better cut to the chase. But here's one of the reasons that I think a prudent person won't ask. It's none of your beeswax, right?
No.
They didn't do it for you, but it's so tantalizing and curious that I'm like, oh, I'm sure you won't mind because you got a tattoo.
Is it the gravy?
That's what that would have been the way to ask. Just look at her sideways and go, it's the gravy, right? And then I'll just go, for me, it's the slaw. But either way, whatever works for you, huh? Okay. 312-981-7200. You saw someone with a strange tattoo. What was it? Or maybe you're someone with a strange tattoo. What is it? And what did you say? And just tell me how that conversation went. I'd kind of like to know. A little later on, since Steve Bertrand just told you that the first legal sports betting in Illinois is taking place today.
Yeah, they had their opening ceremony, I think, at 10, and the betting starts at noon.
So I asked Sam Panionovich, who follows sports wagering for us and who is, of course, there right now. I said, set the scene for me and tell me, what could I bet on? Like, today I could get in the powerful Mach 5 and go over and bet on what? What could I bet on? NBA games? The NCAA tournament brackets aren't set yet. There's no MLB. There's no NFL. I don't know what action they're taking. He said, there's all kinds of things.
There's some conference tournaments going on.
I guess so. I could, right, the Big Ten tournament's coming up. The brackets are set on that. The Big East brackets are set. That's one that you and I will follow.
Well, right now, tonight, UIC is playing Wright State in the Horizon League semifinals.
Who, UIC?
And Wright State, yep.
Yeah. I got a hundo on Wright State.
Do you?
No, I do not. And is it kind of tempting to head on in there? Hey, Kathy, you're on WGN. We were talking about funny tattoos. You're on the air. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you see? What do you know?
Well, my daughters both have a tattoo that's written in Gaelic. It says sister under their right arm, and they live so far away from each other. One is in Australia, and one is here in the Midwest, and they get to think about each other every day.
Oh, that's nice. To be honest with you, my sons did something like that, too.
without telling their parents, I might add.
No, I didn't know either. And it's when my younger daughter came home, and I just noticed something was like, it gets covered by like a bathing suit top or a bra. So she's a professional now, working in a hospital. And I said, what is that? And when my other daughter, Claire, had moved away, there it is. And I'm like, it's written in a different language. It's in Gaelic. So it's very special for both of them.
That's what I'm looking for. 312-981-7200. Thanks for the call, Kathy. Now, that makes sense. The KFC one still doesn't. By the way, Tom, you're on WGN Radio. What was that strange tattoo you noticed or know of? What's going on there, Tom?
Okay, I'm 50 and I don't have a tattoo on me. My daughter has me and her mom tattooed on her wrist. So she said, oh, why? I said, why'd you get that? She's like, because I love my mom and dad. We were like, oh. Then I thought to myself, like, and I asked her, like, so one day you might forget.
Right. I mean, well, now that's the glasses half. That's the glasses half empty, Tom. I want you to think the glasses half full, that she loves you so much. She put her your stamp on her arm. That's amazing.
Yeah, but I didn't do that.
All right, Jeff. That's funny. Thanks for the call, man. You have a good day.
All right.
Come on now. I'll tell you what. There is no stamp of my face on my son's wrist. And it ain't going to happen.
You know, I'm interested in the basketball players I see who've got, I don't know if they're biblical verses or what, but they're like chapters arms.
Yeah, and if you follow Butler basketball, there's this kid named Sean McDermott who's not only Caucasian but very pale, and he has reams of what looks like biblical writing going up and down his arm and his chest, and you kind of want to turn your head sideways and go, what are we doing here?
Right.
What's going on here?
I mean, it's impressive. I could only do like a haiku, I think, on my bicep.
Line 7 is next, or take line 2 first. Let's go to Kim. You're on WGN. Kim, what can we do for you?
Well, this was back in the 70s. I was a nursing student at Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, Carbondale.
Yeah.
And tattoos were not something, you know, really known. And I was to give my first injection. It was a pre-op on late teens, early 20s. And I'm nervous as hell because it's my first injection. So I have her turn, and there's a tattoo of Bambi. So I got Bambi right in the eye.
Bullseye, huh?
Oh, bullseye.
Oh, man. Thanks for the call. I'm going from Kim to Brian. Brian, you're on WGN Radio. What can I do for you?
Hey, good morning, John.
Hey.
Just wanted to say real quick, and touching on the Blackhawks and the sports betting, I just ran in like 20 minutes ago now into Eddie out at the casino standing outside the new sports area.
Yeah, Eddie O's going to place the first bet, I hear.
Yeah, he's there, and it was real nice to see him, elbow bumped with him, and actually didn't even talk Blackhawks. We both are cancer survivors, so I just asked how he was doing.
Attaboy.
It was just real nice to see. He looks real good, too.
Yeah, I saw a picture of him the other day and thought he did. Hey, what a nice thing, and smart with the elbow bump there, Brian.
There you go.
You have a good day, man. Stay well. And Jay, before we go to our next guest, Jay, you jump in there. You're on WGN.
Yeah, hey, first I'm hoping that your elevator friend with a KFC tattoo calls up. I'm curious.
I am too. I still don't have an answer.
Well, and that's kind of the point. She wanted you to ask. That's why people have tattoos visible, because they want you to ask. And I've got the perfect line. Here it is. You can always turn to someone and say, wow, hey, there's a story there. And then they can respond if you want. They'll laugh or they'll chuckle. They say, none of your business. But, hey, there's a story there. And then they'll tell you the story or not.
That sounds a lot less pernicious than Steve Bertrand's It's the Gravy, isn't it? That's better.
Yeah, very good. And I do some speaking. I talk to dads. And I run into a dad who says, yeah. I say, tell me about your kids. And they say, yeah, I've got one that's 3 and one that's 25. And I'll say, well, hey, there's a story there.
There's a story there.
And there's always a story.
And then they're off to the races.
Jay,
thanks, that's
man.
Well put. Thanks for the phone call. So you're just standing there in the elevator. You see the lady with the Colonel Sanders on her forearm, and you go, I'll bet there's a story there.
Yeah, and this is why I turn and face the back corner in the elevators.
Do we agree with what he said, that people who have visible tattoos want to tell you about their tattoo?
I don't know about that.
I don't know the answer to that question. John, maybe the lady with the KFC tattoo is a recipient of the KFC fortune. I don't know. I'm going to guess not. It's 10:37. This is WGN. Keep calling. Keep texting. 312-981-7200. I've been thinking about the red line. I ride the red line, and I'm not thinking right now about the safety of it because there's the virus out there and we're all in close quarters, but rather about CTA safety generally. And two Fridays ago, you know, there was that incident where a guy jumped from one train car to another. He wasn't behaving. That is, behaving. He wasn't answering to the commands of police officers.
Wasn't obeying.
Obeying is not the right word. But the cops said, you know, stop resisting. And he wouldn't stop resisting. They pepper sprayed him. They tased him. And when he broke free, frankly, the three of them were just standing there, the two officers and this guy. But he wasn't doing what they wanted him to do. And as he started to leave, they shot him twice. The acting police superintendent said that this looks like a criminal count. He's asked the state's attorney's office to investigate. He said charges should be dropped. So that's kind of a different tone, said the Mincing Rascals, than we've had from the top of the police department in recent years. But here's my question. How much training do the police have? What kind of training do the police have in a situation like that? I've got a few questions for Kevin Graham. He's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Hey, Kevin, thanks for taking our call this morning. How are you today?
I'm good. What can I do for you?
Well, let's just start there. Are all police officers in Chicago trained with de-escalation tactics or I don't know, means by which they can subdue somebody? Do they all get some sort of physical training?
They do get de-escalation techniques. They are trained in that. Certainly, we have been saying for a long time, we need a better police academy. People don't seem to realize it. We've put aside $100 million for a police academy, yet Los Angeles has spent $750 million for their academy. New York has spent $1.2 billion for their academy. Big difference. And yet we are training police officers with tasers in the hallway of our academy.
That's funny because the amount of money that was put towards that was controversial here in Chicago. I never thought about it in those terms. I thought that sounds like a lot of money, but you think investment in that brick and mortar operation would actually pay dividends on the subway tracks, huh?
It will pay dividends. Look, if there is, and I'm not talking about any specific case, but if there is a mistake made, certainly a lot of that can be corrected in training. And if we don't invest the money into the training, into the facility, into real-life scenarios, then you're going to pay it out on the other end to people when there's perceived wrongdoing by the police officers. And we certainly would like to have more training, a better facility. I just came from the training academy this morning, and the people are parking 5, 6, 7 blocks away because there's not even enough parking for the academy, much less room inside the facility.
What about that video itself, though? You said when the perceived behavior of the police officers, it looks to me like they made some mistakes there. Surely shooting that man was not a good idea, or maybe you can comment on that.
Well, I'm not going to comment on an ongoing investigation. I think a lot of the details have not come out yet. I think that there is far more that people don't know than do know. And I think at this point, they should hold off until the investigation has been completed.
Okay, but just humor me for a moment. If you can't answer questions, don't. But so the police officers are saying, stop resisting, stop resisting. Is that part of the training, to give the person a specific command over and over again, something they should understand and adhere to?
Not only is it taught that way, it is also the law that people do not have the right to resist arrest, a lawful command by the police. If you feel that the police are unjustly bringing you into custody, then there are procedures for that. And you can certainly, you know, file lawsuits, you can file complaints, but the reality is you do not have the right to resist arrest. This person certainly did resist. He certainly put those officers in danger. You know, I'd like to point out that a boxing round is 3 minutes, and that was more than four. You know, it takes a lot out of you when you are in a struggle, and you have to keep your equipment safe, including your firearm, so that somebody else doesn't get a hold of it.
I appreciate that, but I wonder, too, what exact techniques are they taught? Because I'm trying to watch that video and see what I'm looking at there. Let's just pick it up here in a minute. I appreciate your time on this. Kevin Grahams, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police here in Chicago. WGN Radio, our Mega Monday Morning Quiz will be about Illinois college basketball. You a fan? And by the way, sports betting now legal in Illinois. Sam Panionovich is there, our friend and sports betting expert. He'll say hi to us after 11 o'clock. What could you bet on today, Sam? We'll do that, though, in about 35 minutes or so. Kevin Graham is on the phone line right now. Kevin joins us on WGN Radio as the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Kevin, could you just talk a little bit, though, about the techniques that officers are supposed to use when they're trying to subdue someone?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that we do is we try and calmly talk to people and get them to realize that the offense that they may have just committed is not that serious. We need to discuss that. Could be just a ticket written, could be a reprimand. We simply need to talk about this.
I understand that, but that was not a calm voice we were hearing there. There was nothing calm about the voice or the
words.
No,
you heard part of what was going on with a citizen taking that video. And I might add, he was taking the video while he was not assisting those officers. He didn't go over there to say, hey, is there anything I can do? Can I call some help?
I asked the person that took the video to tell us what more he saw, and he wouldn't. I wish he would. But you also don't want citizens to assist, do you?
We would certainly like them to come over and ask if we need, if we may need assistance. I haven't said that they are going to necessarily jump in, but certainly these two officers could have used some assistance. And if nothing else, somebody could have called and said, hey, there's two police officers who are struggling with somebody in the subway, and they need some help.
Seems to me, though, that two trained police officers ought to physically be able to subdue somebody. They tased him. They pepper sprayed him. That didn't seem to work. I didn't get the feeling this guy was high on some supercharged narcotic, but it just didn't look like there was much technique on display.
I think that the entire set of circumstances needs then to come out, because I think at some point I think you may have a different feeling about what occurred.
I know that I'm operating with a limited view here, and I hate that about this. And I'll also give you this, Kevin. I think all of us have seen many instances where the police do just calmly talk to a person and try and defuse the situation. I think if all of us thought about the interactions we've seen with police, we see that more often than not. But evidently, at some point, maybe this is the technique, it's okay to, or the officers get loud, they get angry, they use words that we have to bleep on the radio. I imagine, to be honest with you, that that's also part of the strategy, to sort of verbally overwhelm the person so they stop resisting. Is that true?
Well, first of all, every situation is different. That needs to be pointed out. There are some people who respond to some techniques. There are some people who respond to direct orders, and they only respond when they know that the officer means business. And so sometimes there is colorful language used, but that is for the purposes of them to understand. You start off at a position where we're trying to mitigate the circumstances, where we're trying to bring them into compliance, and then from there, it goes up. But at no time should an officer be backing down from an arrest.
Oh, that's my next question, right? Well, all this guy did say was jump cars. He went from one L car to the other. You're not supposed to do that. He ended up getting shot twice as he was exiting that scene. I wondered if the officers should just say, oh, what the hell? Let's let this guy go for that crime. If our options are shoot him or let him go, let him go. That's never going to happen?
I really think that you're working on a basis that not all the information is out there. And at this point, the investigation is continuing. I would suggest that everyone let the investigation continue before they make a rash decision. I think there is more that people are not aware of. And obviously, I'm not going to comment on an ongoing investigation,
Kevin,
which I started off by saying.
Do you support the charges being dropped against him?
No, I do not. And I made that very clear when I spoke with the superintendent and my statement afterwards. Charges should not have been dropped.
Why?
Simply because there is controversial video out there that somehow now we are not going to enforce the law.
Well, did you see something specific?
That's a very, very dangerous road to start slipping down.
I understand that. But, Kevin, did you see some video that I didn't that would make it clear that charges should not be dropped against this guy?
I know some other things that you do not know.
I want to put Jane on real quick.
You could help us with that. I am not
going to comment on an ongoing investigation. I said that at the very beginning.
No, I won't try and pry out of you something that you can't share with us, but it's sufficient what you're thinking of that might change my mind, huh?
You know what? I think all the facts come out. I think there will be a significant change. I don't know that people will completely understand what occurred, but I do think that there's sufficient evidence that has not been brought out that I think would change people's minds.
Is there a protocol about when an officer can shoot somebody? If this person is not advancing on them, but rather going away at the moment the trigger was pulled, do the police still have the right to shoot in a situation like that?
Look, every situation is different, and it is what is in the officer's mind at the time. We certainly are certainly looking at what the statement is going to be from the officer, because as of right now, I do not believe that either officer has made any statements.
The video makes it clear, though. The guy was not attacking them. He was not coming upon them at the time the trigger was pulled.
Wait a minute. A video is one-dimensional and does not capture all the things that are going on. And it only captures the things that are going on when the video starts. Not what occurred before.
Yeah.
Not what occurred in the peripheral. It occurs just what is one-dimensional that we are viewing.
My question, though, is there a protocol that determines when an officer can pull the trigger and when they can't?
There is a use of force policy in the Chicago Police Department, and there is a state law.
And the police officer can shoot under what circumstances?
This is, and I've already said it. It is what is in the officers, what they are feeling at the time. If they feel that their life is threatened, they certainly can use deadly force.
Lisa on line 5 said, the guy resisted arrest. That's it. That's all you need to know, John. Jane wanted to say this. You're on WGN. Hi, Jane.
Good morning, John. Old nurse. First of all, I will start out by saying, if the police say stop, stop. Okay, worked emergency room 7 years, City Hospital, Philadelphia. Police were bringing in a prisoner to be evaluated, I believe. They were trying to subdue the patient, prisoner. He pulled the water cooler right out of the floor. So they somehow have superhuman strength. Gosh knows whether he was on drugs. The same with this incident on the red line. That's all I have to say.
Thank you for the call. That man, though, displayed no superhuman strength in that video. What you see is two officers grappling with him, his not cooperating, but we don't see any superhuman exercises of strength in that video. We haven't seen it all. I'm out of time. Kevin, Steve, have we got time for one more question?
Kevin, if you don't mind, just one other. I know you're facing a runoff now for the presidency of the union, and you finished second to a guy who, what, he's under police suspension already? Can you tell me the status of the race and when we'll know the results of the runoff?
Sure. We'll know the runoff on April 3rd. I am confident that I will win, but obviously we have an election to do, and it's up to the members to decide whether or not they want me or they want someone else.
Were you surprised that a guy who's currently lost his police powers beat you?
Well, I'm surprised that a lot more hasn't come out. I was surprised that, I wouldn't say that he beat me. First of all, during the election, I had a lot going on. We had court cases, we had arbitrations, and I simply did not have the time to go out to the roll calls to talk to the members. And that certainly was evident during this. I have certainly pushed things off until April so that I can go out and talk to the members and make sure they understand what is going on. I think sometimes people like to hear the person that's shouting the loudest in the room because they think that that person may be more forceful. But when in reality, one of the most important things to do is to have your facts, proceed with the knowledge and the abilities to get a contract done and to look out for your members.
You got a lot going on. We do too, Kevin. I sure appreciate your time. Let's talk again down the road. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Kevin Graham is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Earlier, we asked you to tell us stories about unusual tattoos you've seen or you have, and did you ask that total stranger about them? Hey, John, my daughter's got a bunch of tattoos, and they misspelled a word on one of hers. Boy, that's annoying. John, I'm 58 with my first tattoo. I did it because I wanted to commemorate my grandmother, who was my best friend. I did it for me. And it is where I can see it, and others can't see it if they choose to ask. I'll share it, but I don't expect to have anybody ask. Somebody said people with tattoos that are visible, they want to tell you the story. I'm not sure that that's true, but I'll talk amongst yourselves. Hey, John, was at my nephew's 30th birthday party last summer. Met one of his friends with a Grateful Dead dancing bear prominently adorning his calf. It was at least 6 inches by 6 inches. So I said, "You going to the show at Wrigley next weekend?" He looked dumbfounded. I said, "With the tattoo. I thought you were a big fan."
That's pretty funny.
He said, "Oh, is that what that bear is for?" And yes, he was serious. I asked him. I said, "Are you serious?" He said, "No, I'm serious." What?
So he had the bear but didn't know what the bear was.
He had this iconic image from the band, but he just thought, I guess, it was pretty art. He probably saw it in a book, and it wasn't so meaningful to him. It's not like he's a big fan of the band.
So what's your tattoo?
I don't have one.
You don't have one yet?
Someday I'm going to die, and they're going to look at my body there where they look at bodies, and they're going to go, "Wow, he has no tattoos. How about that?" They'll take pictures. It'll be unbelievable.
He was the guy.
I know. I mean, really. And my sons have tattoos. Your kids probably have tattoos.
My son has a tattoo.
Yeah.
Little bumblebee on the inside of his bicep because he liked the design. I have Lou Manfredini on my calf, my left calf.
Mr. Fix-It. Listen, about the last conversation we had with the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Kevin Graham. Kevin, number one, thanks for coming on. Number two, I can't say this enough. When something bad is happening and you and I are running that way, the cops are coming this way. They're the people that put themselves in harm's way, and we do not appreciate that, and I can't say that enough. When I see a video of a couple of cops shooting a guy who jumped train cars on the red line, I've got questions, and you do too. The most common response we've had in pages and pages of text since that interview just moments ago was, if the police say stop resisting, you have to stop resisting. Well, of course you should. Look, you shouldn't break the law. And when the cops catch you, you should do what they say to do. We all get that. But do we all think that if you disobey the police, that they should shoot you as you're running away up a crowded stairwell at an L stop? I mean, that's all I'm talking about, that individual circumstance. And how justified or rational was that decision by the police? He said, I've seen things on the video you haven't seen. Fair enough. And you don't even have to tell me what they are. But I'm interested in what techniques the police are taught, how proficient they are at those techniques. And is it okay for the cops to shoot you point blank almost if you resist? Lots of texts about this topic to the station. John, the police representative is not helping me trust the police, and I just started liking them. Listen, I'm the one that wants the cops everywhere. I want them at my L stop. I want them on my L car, for crying out loud. But I'm just asking about that particular circumstance. A couple of you, I'm trying to find the one text because, John, when one man cannot be taken down by two trained officers, that's evidence of superhuman strength. You cannot watch that video and tell me that that guy that they were wrestling with was displaying superhuman strength. He was being obstinate. He was not displaying superhuman strength. Nobody in that video was displaying superhuman strength. John, what the hell kind of question is there ever a time if they're resisting arrest to just let them go? Are you kidding? Exclamation point. I did ask that, but really I mean it. So he went from one train car to the other, and you're not supposed to do that. They stopped him, and he resisted. Now he's trying to walk up the stairs. If your options as a police officer are shoot him twice or let him go, I think that's a reasonable scenario for the cops to contemplate. John, you're really getting me angry. It doesn't matter what he did. The thing that matters is you do not resist the police. The public needs to understand that, no, maybe he should not have been shot. I get that, but he resisted the police. Come on, support the police. My son is one. Hey, I've got some Blackhawks tickets to give away. I'll give them away right now. Yeah, we got some pretty good seats for you, too. This is for Friday's game, the 13th, against the Ottawa Senators. Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating and Air Conditioning and Plumbing for all the right reasons. It's Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingAndCooling.com. Okay, you want some good seats? Call me right now, 312-981-7200. This Friday's game, Hawks and the Senators. They ain't out of it yet, kids. 11:17. Let's take caller number 10, Producer Aleph. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I am actually here, unlike Jason, and I can tell you right now, King John, I'm sitting at the Bet River Sportsbook in Des Plaines, Illinois. I am staring at a 47-foot-wide video wall, 14 big TVs here. You've got 30 chairs, 32 bar stools, and then, more importantly, 5 betting stations and 30 betting kiosks, as we are now taking bets officially in the state of Illinois.
This is not a commercial for that venue, but I'm sure every little bit of news does sound like one to them. I mean, folks, what kind of crowd do you have there, Sam?
Got about 150 people, a lot of media people, a lot of casino people, as you could imagine. Eddie Olczyk was here. He just walked by me and gave me a fist bump because him and I both like the White Sox this year. He made the first bet in the state of Illinois history. He bet the White Sox at 16-1 to win the American League pennant. He made a $100 bet. He actually walked over to the window, and this is common as all of these states go legal around the country. Everybody has a ceremonial first bet, and they cut the ribbon, and they open the book. But Eddie Olczyk making the first paper bet at the window, $100 on the White Sox, is 16-1 to win the pennant.
Where is this place?
So it's just actually behind a curtain, and I'm sure they're going to take the curtain down once the ceremonies are over. But it's pretty much an old club here at the Rivers Casino in Des Plaines, which is, of course, right outside Rosemont. You're 5 minutes from O'Hare. But this is pretty much a 4,800-square-foot room just, I don't know, 10 feet away as I look outside the curtain. I'm 10 feet away from a roulette table. So it's just, it's an addition to the casino. It's more places to take more bets. But they converted an old restaurant club area into a sports book bar and a sports book. It's actually pretty cool.
How many places now can I bet today in the state of Illinois then? Two?
No, just one. Just legally one right now at Rivers. But coming in fast will be Alton, which is the Argosy Casino right outside St. Louis, just across the border on the Illinois side. They will be second, and then third will be Elgin. But this is a slow crawl. I think by the end of 2020, you know, we're only in March right now. I think by the end of 2020, you're probably in about 8 or 9 brick-and-mortar joints.
But, Sam, Rivers can open up an app, right? But we can't use that yet.
Correct. Mobile sports betting is going to be pushed down a little bit, but eventually you'll have that sports book, Steve, in your hand. You'll have to come into the sports book in Illinois. You'll have to register, sign up, give them your information, and then deposit money into an account, sort of like a checking account. And then say you put $500 into an account, you can sit on your couch as long as you're inside the state of Illinois, and you can bet $25, $35, $45 on a game. And once you make that bet, that money comes out of your account.
But I've got to go there physically to set that up.
Yes, you do, for now. And that's Illinois' push, because Illinois, obviously, wants to bring people inside the business. They want to bring you inside the casinos right now. And that's why there's this moratorium where you don't have the mobile sports betting right away. Because guess what? They want you to come to their casinos.
So when am I going to be able to do that, though?
Well, that's a personal question, isn't it not?
No, I mean, when will that app become available so that I can do that?
Oh, I thought you were asking me when you can come to the casino. I'm like, whenever you would like. When will the mobile app? We have heard differing answers on that. Initially, it was 18 months, but I think that we're a lot closer. I think we're probably going to be within this calendar year. You'll have mobile betting here. You hear a lot of different opinions and a lot of different answers on that question. It's a very touchy topic, the mobile sports betting, but again, every state is different. Some states put mobile in right away. Some aren't having it at all. Illinois initially was going to have an 18-month moratorium period where you'd have the legal brick-and-mortar joints, but you wouldn't have the mobile yet because they wanted to get the business growing internally. But I think sometime by the end of the calendar year, you will have mobile sports betting.
By the way, we do have a winner on our Blackhawks ticket, so congratulations to Tony in Plainfield. You're going to the Blackhawks. Thanks, Tony, from our friends at Four Seasons. For all the right reasons, it's Four Seasons. So humor me a little, Sam, here. Then I could place bets on what at the Rivers Casino in Des Plaines today?
So if you walk in right now, you can bet on any of the college basketball games tonight. You can bet on any of the NBA games tonight. You can bet on the XFL games coming up this weekend, but why would you ever do that? That sport sucks. You can bet future prices, and that's what Eddie O did. He bet the White Sox to win the pennant. You can bet on teams to win a championship, teams to win a conference, teams to win a pennant. You can do parlays, which is two teams or two sides or two totals or whatever you want, actually. But you can this is a full-blown sports book, so you can bet the straight bets on daily games. You can bet the future prices. You can pretty much bet anything you can bet in Vegas. You can now bet here in Illinois, and guess what? It's legal.
Yeah, so that's the difference, right? I mean, people have been doing this all along, but it's the mailman that delivers the card that you fill out that hands the money back to you when you win.
Correct, and I have two quick nuggets real quick. Only in Illinois fashion would you have these two things happen at the opening ceremonies. The wireless microphones were going in and out half of the press conference, so you couldn't hear half the things that were said. And then Neil Bloom, who's the chairman of Rush Street Gaming, let's just say he had a clothing gaffe where the belt came off and the pants came down as he was giving his speech. You can't make this stuff up. And then he said, well, the stock market's down today, and so are my pants. And then he pulled them back up and belted them back up. It doesn't sound like that would actually happen, but in true fashion, the microphones were in and out, and the chairman's pants actually fell down.
Like to his knees?
Not that low, but noticeably enough. You'll see it, and you'll read about it, and you'll hear about it, and hopefully I'm not getting in trouble. I think security's coming to take me out now. But I'm standing there, and I'm like, first of all, the microphones aren't working, so everything is in and out. And then, the chairman had a clothing gaffe at the opening ceremonies.
What percentage of the tax does the state impose, and does that go on the bet or on the winnings?
So this will come out of their rate, and what I mean by that is that'll come out. Say you lose $100 at Rivers Casino, the state of Illinois will take 15% of that $100. So they'll take right off the top, they'll take that right away and put it in their kitty. So in Nevada, conversely, the state tax is only 6.75%. So of that $100 you lose, they take about $7 off the top. Illinois is going to take 15, and that's what Illinois does. It's also an extra 2% for Cook County. So 17% comes right out of the gate on a losing bet, and that's sort of built into some of these lines here. I know you got to go, but in Vegas, you got to lay 110 to win 100 on most of your bets. I'm looking at a lot of these bets here. You got to lay 114 to win 100, 115 to win 100. So they're going to nickel and dime because they got to make up the money that they spent $10 million to get this license, and they got to make their money somewhere.
It's 11:25. Sam Panionovich, who follows the sports wagering world for us, is on the phone. He's at the Rivers Casino. I actually have 2 minutes here, Sam. But so when Eddie O puts that $100 down, if he loses, he doesn't lose any more. He only loses his $100. But the casino, rather than getting $100, gets 85 minus 2% more from Cook County, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So a future bet, there's no juice on it. There's no tax on it for the better. That's just $100 to win. And in Eddie's case, it's $100 to win $1,600.
And then, but course, if I win this, so, but Eddie gets $1,600 if the White Sox win the pennant. So then he'll have to pay a tax on that. But I guess that's just taxed as income, right?
He'll have to report anything over, I think, $700. I think that's the Illinois regulation put in play by the gaming board. Anything, any win over $700, I think you have to report. It's a lot different in Vegas, where you don't have to report anything until $9,999. But Illinois wants to know everything. So if you win over $700, you have to report it. But you're right. Yeah, that $100 bet, if he loses $100. That's it. But if he wins, he makes $1,600.
See, Bertrand, you're a big Marquette basketball fan. Big East tournament's right around the corner.
Wow, is that salt you're rubbing in my wounds?
You could bet on the Marquette Golden Eagles to beat somebody in the first round.
We've been limping, and we're not a Big East tournament team.
Then you could vote against them, bet against them.
I wouldn't do that.
Hey Steve, not with that attitude, you're not. You can actually, I think they have the Big East Conference odds up right here, so you can actually bet on a team to win their conference. I know, King, you might bet Butler. Steve, I think the odds on Marquette to win the Big East tournament, I think they were like 8 or 9 to 1 to win the whole tournament.
Okay.
What about Butler? Do you happen to see that in front of you, do you?
It's not in front of me, but I know that Butler's the 4 seed in the tournament, so let's cut the odds in half. Butler's probably about 4 or 5 to 1 to win the Big East tournament. DePaul is probably infinity to one to win the Big East tournament after the turnaround they had in the beginning of the season and then, you know, the fall from grace. But DePaul, I saw them, they were like 200 to 1. To win the Big East tournament, so don't burn that money.
Yeah, no kidding. Probably Seton Hall. Probably if I had to bet one, I'd bet Seton Hall.
Well, I wouldn't bet on Butler.
We're out of time. Ding, ding, ding. There's the closing bell. Sam, thank you. We always appreciate your time.
I'll see you soon.
That's Sam Panionovich. Follows wagering for us here on WGN on the John Williams Show. Jason, this is John. You've been holding for a while. What can we do for you? You're on WGN.
Yeah, I was just calling in to let everybody know that on, when was it? It was on Amtrak. I was on Amtrak, and on train 303, it said March 4th. And it let me know, it said, last night Amtrak received notification from local authorities that a customer who traveled on March 4th between Chicago and St. Louis on the train was tested positive for the COVID-19, the illness associated with the coronavirus. The lady came from Italy, where 17 million people were quarantined, and then when she flew over, she caught a train in Chicago, got on the same train that I was on, and they didn't do nothing. Nobody was tested. People, they're playing it down, saying that while your risks remain low, as a precaution, Amtrak is informing those who were on board the train.
Well, no, she got on the same train you were on, but not the same train ride you were on, correct?
No, I was right. One car behind her.
So you were on the same train ride, not in the same train car. So how did they notify you this? Was it a text or email?
Email.
And right, she had flown in through O'Hare, got on the train, and then went south to St. Louis. We've been talking about that story this morning.
So he was on that train. And so then what are they telling you to do about that?
Their exact words were, while your risk remains low and as a precaution, Amtrak is informing those who are on board the train. If you have any questions or develop symptoms, please contact your doctor or the health department.
But, you know, it's true that your risk does remain low. I mean, you were physically separated from this woman by a train car.
Right, but everybody walks from car to car to go get food, go to the bathroom.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. I'm just, like, it was such a big deal. I just heard that they were, when the lady went to St. Louis, she got off, she went home, and then supposedly her child and her father went to a school for a father-daughter dance. They quarantined both schools, and I was on that same train. So, like, What precautions are they taking? They're not even barely letting anybody know. The public doesn't even know about this.
Do we know when the woman got on the train that you were on? Did she know?
On March 4th.
Okay, but here's my question. I wonder if she or anybody knew at that time that she was positive for coronavirus. Sounds like not, right?
I don't know. How do they know that she even was positive for the coronavirus after she got off the train? How do they know, period?
Yeah, my guess is eventually you go to the doctor, they say you had coronavirus, or where have you been lately? And then they just retrace your steps, and lo and behold, she was on that train. This is no consolation to you, maybe. I'm just kind of wondering, did the lady get on the train knowing that she was not well or not? But that's beside the point. She can be contagious.
My guess, exactly. Yeah. How did they even let her get on the airplane?
Listen, I sense the, I won't say, I sense the concern in your voice. Is that maybe the best way to put it?
Like, I don't feel like I have symptoms, but like, what if somebody else does and it just gets spread that way and they don't want to get treated because they don't want to look like the bad guy.
So, what was your train ride like? Did you move about the car? Did you stay stationary? Did you go to the food car? That sort of thing?
Yeah, I moved about the car, went to the bathroom, plugged in my phone charger. I mean, I washed my hands, but this virus is spreading globally. Like, how many countries are blocked off from traveling now?
Yeah.
And she was able to travel from Italy.
So the story I read is she's in her 20s. She flew into O'Hare on Monday, took an Amtrak train to St. Louis on Wednesday, according to Missouri and St. Louis officials. They did not say where she stayed in Chicago or how she got to Union Station to get on the train. She'd been studying abroad in Italy.
Right, but we don't know if she was demonstrated. Was she ill when she got on the train in Chicago, Steve?
I don't believe that's the case. No, once home, the woman began to feel ill, and on Thursday she talked to doctors or the health department there.
And while she was on the train, though, with our caller Jason, she may well have been contagious. I mean, that sounds quite plausible. So I understand the concern in his voice.
Right, that's like the birth stages of the symptoms. But and how many people did she come in contact with since then?
But I understand the concern too. But remember that even with that concern, your chances are very low.
Sure, but they're better if he wasn't on the train at all. I mean, I think this is this is a step up from you and I have been, put it this way, I have been poo-pooing the concern that we all have that's driving us to hoard rice and toilet paper and supplies. I've been going out in public. I ride the train every day. But if you said, hey, somebody that was on your train had the virus, I think my concern would be ratcheted up considerably.
What do you think the chances are, John, that someone on your L train, one of the 10 cars, has been exposed to the virus or has the virus?
I don't have
it. Hey, can I tell you guys something? I called them back after I got the email, and I asked them what they're doing to stop it. Like, are you testing people before they get on the train? And the lady's words was like, no, sir, how can we test everybody? Well, they're testing people before they get on trains and planes and all these different places and countries. Why aren't we doing it here?
No, we're not, though. We're absolutely not. We don't have the testing kits. They are absolutely not doing that. I don't even know that that's plausible. I don't know that that's feasible.
I actually saw a story this morning where in some restaurants in L.A., they're taking your temperature before they let you in.
See?
All right. Well, listen, Jason, thanks for the heads up, man. Are you going to do anything about it? I guess there's nothing for you to do unless you start to feel ill, right?
Yeah, for myself, yeah. But, I mean, all those other people that were on that plane in Union Station downtown on the train, all they did was disconnect the car and take the car out. Like, that's going to stop it?
Really interesting. Jason, do me a favor. I'm going to put you on hold. Just share your phone number, if you don't mind, with Producer Elif, and let's stay in touch, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for the call, man. You hang in there. You hang in there. You know, Steve's right, though. I mean, listen, the very first interview we did on the show this morning was with Dr. Robert Sitrenberg, the infectious diseases specialist at Advocate Lutheran General. He's the guy that posted on Facebook last week, just kind of a stay calm, weather the storm post on Facebook. And it just had a lot of common sense things. This was my question to him. The reason we called him back today, if you're in a room and I'm in a room, you have the virus, I don't. Will I get it from you? He said no.
Right.
He said no. If you were in the same room as a person who was positive, you won't get it from them unless they sneeze in you and on you and you inhale it and you ingest it.
Or if they touch something with it, and then you touch it, you pick it up, and then you put it in your ear, eye, nose, mouth, which is the most common means of transmission. So avoid that as much as you can.
And even
the idea that you were on a train car with somebody doesn't mean you're going to get it.
And even if you do get it, right, the chances of you being symptomatic or seriously ill are very small.
It's interesting because he said, but you know, we don't know how many people have it because so many people get it and they don't know they have it. I don't know if that ratchets
that
the fear
news
up
or bad
ratchets
news
down.
Or, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's why I wonder, you know, you're on the CTA. It's been around here for a few weeks now. What are the chances that someone on your car or your train has been exposed to someone? I would imagine it's, you know, it's getting more and more, but we assume that just because we're exposed to it, we're going to come down with the worst version of it. And I just think that's, we're scaring ourselves a little bit.
There's this distinction I meant to ask the doctor about, I didn't. It's people dying with the virus, people dying from the virus. A lot of the people that are dying that have the virus are dying not just because they got the virus. It's not that fatal. It's you are so compromised that this was one of the factors that led to your death. It might have been the tipping point. I know you don't want to die. We're just trying to figure out what how lethal it is.
So to be crude, I guess, is a lot of times when we get cold-related deaths from the Cook County Medical Examiner, they also are related to alcohol poisoning or things like that.
Sure.
Right? But they call it a cold, but it's cold-related. And that's kind of what you're saying here.
People are going to die eventually.
People are in bad shape.
More likely to die because their issues, their health is so compromised. Then they get this virus. The virus finally kills them. If you are healthy and get the virus, it might not kill you, the same germ that killed them, the
virus.
Well,
it probably won't kill you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
11:42. The Mega Monday Morning Quiz comes your way on Monday mornings, and here it is. It's time for that. We need a caller number 73 at 312-981-7200. I'm changing that now to caller number 17. The category is Illinois College Basketball, but with it being March and all. Illinois College Basketball, do you know your stuff? Our quiz is next. If you are the 17th caller, you get to play. Matt Bubala, who hosts the show and has been a longtime producer here, is called in. Hey, Matt.
Hey, John Williams. How are you, buddy?
What's going on, bud?
Well, I was hearing you and Steve talk about it just the last few minutes, and my concern with the way you're talking about it is you're just talking about, oh, but it's okay. You're probably not going to die. You're probably going to, you won't even know you have it, maybe, et cetera, et cetera. And that's fine. And that's true for most of us. But if you get it and you pass it along and we keep passing it along, then we're going to be in contact with older people and things like that. So I'm not worried about myself. In fact, I'm looking to see now if our family can get a good deal to Europe over the summer. But what if I contract it and then give it to my mother-in-law or my mom who are in their 70s? That's where things get dangerous. And I read an interesting tweet on the show over the weekend about the healthcare system. There was a case of a guy who had a heart attack and paramedics responded, gave him mouth-to-mouth. The gentleman died. He had coronavirus. Now those seven paramedics need to be quarantined or stay home from work for a couple of weeks, right? If that keeps happening within our healthcare system, with the amount of hospital beds we have available, with the amount of healthcare workers we have, that's where things can get very taxing for other people who have diseases or need healthcare and keep affecting the economy like we're seeing today.
What would you have told that caller, Jason, who had it, who was on the same train car as the woman who was exposed?
I don't think he was that worried about himself. I mean, he might have it, he might not. But the idea is this person got on all these places. And then I know you mentioned your doctor said, oh, if you're in the same room with the person, unless you touch something. Well, think about how you are in a train or a plane. All the things you touch, you use the washroom, you go to the same place. Think about these cruise ships where the guy had it on the previous trip. And then on the next leg, all these people are contracting it. Well, you would assume they're cleaning these things down really well when you're on a cruise ship. But it must be a pretty hardy disease or we don't clean well enough that it's getting passed around on the second leg of a cruise that the person who had it is not even on anymore. So I would think, oh, well, this is getting passed around to some people on this train, and they don't know it yet.
Well, I'm sure glad it hasn't surfaced on the L yet. I mean, can you just imagine? Because the idea
you don't know that it surfaced on the L yet, John. Just wait.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Matt. But the thing is, because he said, like, well, just don't touch mutually shared things on the L. That's all there is. You're all just holding on to the stuff. So
I'm waiting for the Super Tuesday story from California and all the people that voted that day not realizing that they had coronavirus and everybody was going touching those buttons.
The president said he's not going to stop doing his rallies
40,000 people all crammed into the same space. Bernie did a rally here this weekend. There was no mention of not doing the rally. And Joe Biden hasn't said that he's going to curtail his rallies either. So that's just kind of an interesting decision to me. On the one hand, the administration is urging us to all take as much precaution as possible. And the three people who are running for office are not curtailing their public appearances.
In fairness, the city of Chicago, Dr. Arides, is saying that we should not be canceling mass events right now.
Does it seem like we're speaking with two voices here, though?
I mean, there are a lot of different voices going on, I think. I mean, the president was tweeting about the flu. You know, and I don't know how the president was tweeting about the flu deaths every year and how huge they are.
Expressed his surprise at the number of deaths from the flu.
Right. And he's not wrong, you know?
I'm going to pull up his last tweet, by the way. Maybe I shouldn't, because he's kind of does what I do sometimes. You're always looking for the best possible spin on things.
He's trying to downplay it.
He's saying, hey, but at least gas prices are low. Literally, that was his tweet a little while ago. We know that, but I don't think that's I don't think the comfort that provides is all that helpful right now. I got to hang up on you, Producer Matt.
Good talking to you, John.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Okay, Scott's going to play our Mega Monday Morning Quiz. Here comes our intro in 3,
come back
2,
to Chicago.
1.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
In Chicago.
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 Chicago. Chicago. City. I'm coming home again.
Actually, I usually like to play some thinking music here, so let's do this. Scott's going to play the game. Hey, Scott, you're on WGN. How are you, Scott?
Good, John. Good morning.
You're pretty good at college basketball?
Well, we're going to try.
That sounds like no.
Oh, come on.
Well, listen to this. You are in good luck, sir, because Dave Ennett has just walked into the studio, the play-by-play voice of the Northwestern Wildcats. Hi, Dave. What's going on?
Hey, John. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Dave.
If you need a lifeline, Dave's right here for you. Scott, are you ready?
I don't think Scott needs a lifeline, but I'm here.
The most recent Illinois Mr. Basketball to play for an Illinois school, Charlie Moore, is the starting point guard for this Illinois team. The most recent Illinois Mr. Basketball to play for an Illinois school. Mr. Basketball, Charlie Moore, is currently the starting point guard for this team. What team, Scott?
Dave, I'll need help here.
Okay. He didn't begin his career there.
He did not.
He began as a Kansas Jayhawk. He is now, can I go ahead and say it?
Here it comes.
A DePaul Blue Demon.
Well, that's your guess, Dave.
My guess. Yes. I'm sorry, Scott. That's merely a guess.
You want to go with that, Scott? He's not sure. Even sure. I roll the dice with Dave Ennett, and that is a correct answer. DePaul. Charlie's terrific. The team just doesn't have all the pieces for him. They were pretty good this year, 11-7, and first place in their conference division. Their most famous player may be Kenny Battle, who played here before transferring to the University of Illinois. What school is that? That's a tough one. Now, that's a tough one.
The University of Illinois, Champaign.
That's where he went, but where was he before then? Dave, you got any help on this one?
I could give you some help on this.
Give him a clue.
They're a kind of a husky bunch of guys.
Good football program, too.
Northern.
Northern is correct. You just hit the thing out of the park.
Woo-hoo.
Here's number 3. They've only been to the NCAA tournament once, and when they went, they won their first round game before losing to number 1 Gonzaga. Who is that?
Man, that's a tough one.
I agree. I think there's only one. Dave, I'm going to need help again, I guess.
Dave.
That would be your Northwestern Wildcats.
Dave, who is the play-by-play voice of the Northwestern Wildcats?
That would be me.
Ding, ding, ding.
I knew that one.
Yeah, here's question number 4. Who's the voice of the Wildcats? Scott.
Let's go with Dave.
Attaboy! Here's your next question, gentlemen. They have the national distinction of earning the most national invitation tournament berths. This is a perennial NIT team with 14 without ever making the semifinals. They're almost always in the NIT. They never get very far. Their last NCAA appearance was in 1997 when they made it to the second round. One-time Bulls coach Doug Collins is an alum of this Central Illinois basketball power.
I'll go Bradley, but I'll ask for backup.
Dave, you want to give him some backup?
Well,
it's their rival.
Not only is it is Bradley, they're both there on I-74, and in fact, the court at this particular school is named for Doug Collins.
Illinois State University is the correct answer. The University of Illinois is the only Illinois school to have won more games than this school. They're number two in the state. They just clinched their second consecutive NCAA tournament berth. Dave?
Oh, you just mentioned them, I think.
Scott, you're technically taking this quiz. You want to lock one out?
Bradley,
let's go. Bradley, that's a boy.
Yes.
This team is famous for its 100-year-old fan. She's 100 years old
now. Isn't that
now.
Amazing?
And she's still going to the games.
How about Sister Jean?
Sister Jean is correct. Loyola. Ding, 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 ding. And I'll give you one more. The New York Knicks have won the NBA championship only twice, 1970 and 1973. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
And led by Walt Frazier, an alum of this Illinois basketball program. What school did Walt Frazier go to?
Dave!
He was a Saluki.
Attaboy.
Was Phil Jackson on those teams, too?
On those Knicks teams?
Right around then, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How about that?
At least on one of them.
Dave, congratulations. We're going to give you a hoodie as well.
Oh, very nice. I was hoping so.
Hey, Scott, nice going, sir. You had good company in that Mr. Dave Ennett, didn't you?
I got lucky. I did. Appreciate it.
Nice job, Scott.
I want you to hold the line. Thanks for listening, Scott. It's been a pleasure talking to you today, and Elif's going to get you that hoodie, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. Boy, Dave, you sure bailed that guy out. Nice job there, my friend. It's 11:59. John Hansen's down the hall getting ready for the business lunch today. Hi, John. How are you?
Doing pretty well, despite the markets down 1,600. When the markets fall this much, I always like to look at what's actually doing well.
Yeah.
Dollar Tree is doing well today. Maybe everyone's looking for that $1 thing that they need.
You know, another good one, I suppose, to look up would be Walgreens or CVS.
Right?
If this is a health scare, you think they would do well, right?
Right, exactly. I'll have to look those up for the show. But Terry Savage, who normally comes on Wednesdays, is going to come on today right at the top of the show. I think to kind of convince us all to stay on that ledge here today, we're going to be okay, and she's going to walk us through it. At least I think so. We'll hope so. And then also, did you hear about this new park in Lamont, one of the world's biggest parks is going to be coming here, like an amusement park sort of thing with zip lining, all this crazy stuff. So
wow, I haven't heard about
that. Yeah,
okay.
It's going to be great.
John's right around the corner. Stay there.